Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parents Coaching Parents Network with your host, M.H. Scott. This is a one-hour interactive talk show. We'll talk college recruiting, athletic scholarships, and much more. Here's your host, M.H. Scott.
Hey, welcome to another Parents Coaching Parents Network. I'm your host, M.H. Scott. Folks, hopefully we got some information for you this afternoon. And I think it's going to be information that definitely you're going to want to take notes on. Because when I came across this, I had to pause for the cause, folks. And that's the only way I can really and truly put it. I had to pause because listening to this information and listening to this brother speak provides to what has gone on working towards over the last few years. And when I say that, I have seriously been, trying to figure out a way to help reach your greatest potential, to inspire, to motivate, to understand, to better communicate with your child as an athlete. Now, let me not get this wrong. The conversation, we're going to focus a lot around being athletes, but I want you as a parent to look at this from the overall perspective, just being that mom or just being that dad. You know, not taking anything away from just apparently because that's prior to us, you know. But I think we need a whole lot more if we understand the net we have as being. Or in some cases, grandma, grandpa, or whatever you want to call it. But today we talk about something that, like I said, when I came across this here situation, it had me in awe. You know, it was something that I said, okay, I really and truly have to reach out to this brother and get him on the show and let's break this down for us. Because this is, to me, this is something we as parents of athletes miss when we're trying to communicate with our children. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about the situational identity matrix. And I'm going to let our guest break all that down, because when I heard it, I was like, situation, matrix, what is all that? What is Sam? What is he talking about? And I had to really listen to what he was saying, and I just so happened to come across a TED Talk that our guest did. And after that TED Talk, after I listened very thoroughly to that TED Talk, it was clear to me what the conversation was all about. Well, folks, I can sit up here and I can talk for a good little while. I have no problem with that. But I'm going to do something even more. So I'm going to bring our guest in, Mr. Alonzo Jones. He is coming in to us today. I was going to say this morning, but he's coming in today from Arizona.
Yes, yes.
Taking my big schedule, I guess, chime in on our conversation on this afternoon. Mr. Jones, are you out there?
I'm doing very well, Michael. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, great, brother. Great that you're spending. You know, I truly appreciate the quick turnaround that you did. You know, we can just in after we threw a couple words back and forth. Next thing you know, I said, you know, the time period that worked for me, and I said, okay, well, you got to have this conversation. I can't let this one away. So we truly appreciate you joining us this afternoon. Tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Absolutely, I sure will. And just from a technology perspective, you're still breaking up a little bit on my end, so I want to make sure I follow kind of the flow here. But, Michael, thank you so much. Truly appreciate that. Hello to everyone sort of listening in. Thank you for taking some time out your day to, you know, really just kind of chime in, listen. Hopefully you'll have some questions around this beautiful thing called being parents to our wonderful children. By way of introduction, professionally, I'm a higher education guy. I've been working in college environments for about 30 years now. And currently I serve as the associate athletic director for something called Championship Life. That's basically our terminology for life skills. And so I coordinate the life skills programming for all of our student athletes at Arizona State University, which is a Division I Conference V collegiate program. And then I pay specific focus on football and basketball, or to say that differently, working with beautiful black men in their coming-of-age process. But also relevant to this conversation, Michael, is I am a father of six children ranging from ages 16 to 31, and all who have had many opportunities to be engaged in a number of kind of opportunities to include sport. One of my sons is a track athlete at Arizona State University. So that's the perspective that I'm speaking from. Very glad to be here, brother.
Oh, man. You said six.
Six.
And really, you really threw me off when you said one of them was actually 31.
Yeah. I had heard when I was relatively young.
I don't know about the flyer that I put out there, folks. I don't know if that was a true picture. That may have been don't fault me on that one.
Well,
hey, we appreciate that. What was that? Okay. But, you know, and how long have you been at Arizona State?
Yeah, Michael, I was a first-generation kid. You know, my dad was a military guy, so we traveled a lot. He had tremendous value on education, in large part for what he was unable to achieve because of it. He was able to ascend in the military to the highest rank of a non-commissioned officer and was often training and educating folks with degrees. So he wanted to make sure that that cycle was broken with his son. And so education was a priority from day one. And I chose to go to Arizona State University as an undergrad. He retired in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was, a little bit down the road, about 6 hours in a car, far enough to get my own independence, but close enough to get back to my loving home when I needed to. And so I started at ASU in 1986, finished in 91, and then my first opportunity to work was in admissions recruiting from predominantly minority high schools in the Phoenix metro area. And then I did that for 2 years and then took a five-year stint in Texas, a little town called San Marcos, Texas, at Texas State University, and I worked in multicultural student affairs there. And then I came back in 98 to ASU and been here ever since, and then transitioned to athletics about 5 years ago,
So, folks, we got today. We got folks that not only have a journey, from being a student, now has transitioned over to being, still part of the faculty at his alma mater. He is one of those Arizona State sons, so kindly put it, if I'm saying it right.
Breaking up a little, Michael.
Now you're Arizona State.
Sun Devils, yes sir.
Okay. And we're still joining in on the conversation. Hopefully, folks ain't breaking up too much, and I may have to figure out something here on one of our weeks how I can fix this. But nothing else, I know how I can really fix it. But what I want to do, and I do have a place
for
yourself.
Michael, I didn't hear that last question, but
play sports.
I heard sports.
Okay. Folks, give me a hot second, and we're going to go ahead and, Mike, let's go and give me that college experience. We'll be right back, folks.
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Hey, folks, we're back, and we're talking to Mr. Alonzo Jones from ASU. And Mr. Jones was just sharing some insight with us, and I asked him a question. Did he have the opportunity to be an athlete along his journey? I know he focused on it and talked about dad pressing the issue of being on that academic side or understanding that those academics is important. You know, did you also have opportunity to be an athlete?
Well, I appreciate that. In high school, I was an athlete. I was a cross-country and track guy, a miler in particular. But when I went to college, I became a D1 level domino player. So I kind of gave up the athlete side of it. I played the dorm room dominoes. Yeah. So no, I was not a collegiate athlete, but I had always worked in the space of male development, particularly black male development, through my work in multicultural affairs. And had developed a very strong partnership with a good friend of mine, 25 years plus, who was now the deputy athletic director in athletics, a gentleman deeply committed to the uplift of student athletes with a particular focus on black men. And we had always worked together. I always was brought in to talk with the athletes. And 5 years ago, we had a chance to make it official. And so I joined athletics through his invitation. So not the traditional pathway, not an athlete that then works in athletics.
Hey, you did it enough. If you was an athlete in high school, that's good enough. And
there
especially
it is, yeah.
taking on that mile,
uh-huh.
That's no
yep.
joke.
Yeah,
taking on that mile that gave you enough athletic credit for the
yeah,
next
yeah.
4 or 5 years, and probably more years to come.
You know, I feel
that mile,
that,
no joke. I understand it that's, for sure. Well, let's go into the questions that we. We want to address this afternoon.
Okay.
You know, you titled this Situation Identity Matrix. Give us
right.
a little insight on what is Situation Identity Matrix.
Thank you, Michael. The Situational Identity Matrix is basically all of our identities to, you know, include us as parents and certainly as young people, whether they're just students or student athletes. You know, we all got many different identities that sort of are a part of our essence, a part of our fabric, a part of our consonance, right? But how do you understand which identity ought to be dominant at a given moment? Well, that's the situational piece. It's contextualized by either who we're around or where we're at. And if a young person can figure this out, they'll have a lot of success in life versus this identity conflation or confusion where the wrong identity or the identity that's perfectly appropriate in one place, one situation, kind of shows up in a place where it's perhaps not appropriate. And so the situational identity matrix acknowledges that we're complex, that we're dynamic, that we're multifaceted human beings, but we also have to understand context clues. Now, it's pretty simply said, but a lot of humans, a lot of young people get these identities mixed up, particularly the identity of social, which is one that is casual, hanging out, having fun, talking nonsense with your peoples. That's perfectly appropriate, you know, when you're in social settings. But a lot of times that identity creeps into more formal spaces like the classroom, where that is a more formal focus, get ready, give me the info, let me lean in, let me be in that mental state. And there's identity confusion, and the intent of being a student in the classroom, which is to learn, that is not fulfilled because the right identity is not in the space. And within the athletic process, you know, if it's a field or a court or a pool, the corresponding identity to that is athlete. That makes sense. The state of mind is formal, and the intent is to compete, to be focused, to get feedback, to improve, right? But if you bring a certain casualness, a certain informality, a certain kind of social playfulness into an athletic space, well, you're not giving justice to the drill. You're not giving justice to the coaching. You're not giving justice to what your intent is in that particular situation, and that manifests itself. It shows itself out in performance and practice and then game day. And so we all have identities, right? You know, I'm talking to you, we're colleagues. When I walk back in my house and I see my wife, I'm a husband. If I walk around the corner and I see one of my six kids, the identity of father comes out. You know, it is people and places that helps us tap in or bring out the identity that ought to be front and center. And if we nurture these individual identities to their maximum, to their full potential, well, then we're living our best life. We're owning every given moment, and we have balance. It's when you confuse these identities that you have problems or chaos, if that makes sense.
That definitely does, definitely does. Folks, if you are joining in on this conversation, you can always reach us at 516-453-9932. Let me give you that number again, 516-453-9932. Join in on the conversation. Hey, once you get to that number, you hit that prompt and let you know that you're in the queue, and then we'll find out whether or not you have a good question that you want to address or you want to ask Mr. Jones. So we're going to keep on rocking and rolling until you jump on the line with us, folks. But I know some of you out there got some questions that you're ready to roll with. But when we're talking about our athletes, and I know you gave and I like hearing the thorough breakdown that you do. Tell us about the house party and the spot as far as our athletes, whether or not they're in the high school setting or whether or not they're in the collegiate setting. Tell us about how they identify themselves in those two environments.
Right, right. So if you're talking about a college space, you're talking, generally speaking, an 18 to 22-year-old, right? And a student athlete is just like every other 18 to 22-year-old, with the exception that they have a talent that they've been recruited to come to an institution to contribute to a particular sport. And I like to tell beautiful young athletes that you can do anything that a student can do. However, not all students can do what you can do. So there's a unique added element, that athlete piece that tags on to student athlete. And so they have to be sophisticated in balancing both the academic intellectual rigor, but also being able to perform and practice and achieve at a very high competitive level just one step before a pro sport. And so this 18 to 22-year-old nuance is a reality for anyone. So they're contending with a number of things. In most instances, they've left their mama and daddy's house. There's a certain kind of check-in that you have when you come back to your mom and dad's house. It's a Friday night. Y'all went and hang out a little bit after a game. You mitigate your behaviors because you know you got to walk back in the house. And you know you got to look mom or dad in the eye, or they can understand how you're coming in. They know you're their baby, and so there's some accountability, there's some self check that occurs. When you go to college, Michael, man, you are your own boss, you are your own authority figure, and you got to make decisions at midnight, right? And so the identities that they contend with are the same identities of typical 18 to 22 year olds, newfound freedoms. There's certainly high social opportunity. If you think about it, you got, in some instances, thousands of other 18-year-old co-eds all collapsed in a common space, hormones raging, high risk, willing to just take on society, can live forever. It's an exciting, conflated time, right? And they have to manage all this. And so the house parties are a part of that, right? Or to say it differently, going into some common space through invitation and music is playing and you're kind of checking out people and you're seeing if you got game and you're seeing who's looking at you. You know, you got the athlete identity, which brings an element of quasi-fame to you. You know, you're smelling yourself, you're feeling good, right? What identity corresponds to, what identity corresponds with contemporary house party? Well, you know, it used to be church. That's what they used to call it back in the day. When I first started doing this presentation, I did it in Oakland. They were hyphy back then, right? Crunk. But now the contemporary term, Michael, and this helps me keep up with the language, is lit, L-I-T, right? And so the house party has an identity with lit. You know, if you're hanging out playing Madden in your room, you know, that's a social identity. In the classroom, that's a student identity. If you got a job and you're working, you know, when I do this with the young people, they say professional, you know, revealing the confidence. I love that I'm a professional, but no, they're employees at that point. And then on the field, they're an athlete, right? So you got these five corresponding identities that are all sort of with them, and the list can go on and on. But the important thing is that they're not – we're not talking about five different identities, five different fingerprints. No, we're talking about one multifaceted, complex human being that has all of these residual identities that are sort of waiting to come out within appropriate context. And I share the house party because I'm trying to let young people know your social habits, the way you dance, the way you move, what you wear, what you listen to, is not to critique. It's not an intergenerational critique, right? Your parents had their own way of doing it. Your grandparents had their own way of doing it. And so I started to say, hey, man, you live your social life. Make healthy choices, right? But if you can have your fun, if you can have your ultra-fun time, if that has a right to exist, then your intellectual self also has a right to exist and needs to be nurtured, and your athletic self has a right to exist and needs to be nurtured, but not over-nurtured to the point to where you deny all the other developmental needs and opportunities you have within the collegiate space.
Folks, I hope y'all got all the notes on that because I took it all in, and I can rattle it all back, but I want to see where many of y'all are at. Hey, again, if you got a question, you hit option number one on your phone, and that'll put you in the queue and let you know that, hey, you want to join this conversation. Or if you just want to call in, you're still listening via online, you can reach us at 516-453-9932. 516, let me slow that down a little bit. 453. Yeah, I know your ink pen is not working right now. Let me say it again. 453-9932. All right. Join this conversation. We're talking to Mr. Jones here, Mr. Alonzo Jones, a.k.a. AJ, coming to us from Arizona, folks, Arizona. So you know it's a little time difference going on. The weather is probably a whole lot better than what we're dealing with in our respective areas here on the East Coast, but he agreed to join us and just share some insight on this phenomenal conversation called situation identity. And, you know, and thinking about this situation identity, how could we as parents assist our children and stay focused in their identity?
Right. Great question. You know, I think as parents, we think about our children. At times we obsess about our children, right? But, you know, our core responsibility is to raise them, Michael, and to raise them to be healthy, holistic human beings. And that is a question that I hope is thought about even when the child is in the womb, that's thought about in partnership with your significant other. And that you are very intentful in the kind of shaping and experience that you set in motion for your beautiful child. First and foremost, in my wife and I's world, is education, and followed secondly by exposure. And when I say exposure, it certainly includes sports, but also a range of other things in which they can experience, and you can see where they excel, what their talents are. You know, that could be, you know, one of my sons is an opera singer. That was his major. I have another son that's a robotics major. He's oriented to things. He likes math and science. I have another son that's a D1 athlete. He, you could just see how he moved, that he was tracking more towards dexterity and agility, you know, and then he tracked kind of sports. I have another son that's more leadership-oriented. He's a doer. He's very task-oriented. And then my youngest daughter is she likes makeup, right? So she also plays volleyball, but she's tracking in something that might not necessarily have a college degree. And then my oldest one is, that's my little egghead. She's a PhD candidate at UCLA, right? So you expose them to things, golf, bowling, pool, swimming, drama, acting, right? And then you kind of see what they lean towards, and then you encourage and nurture that versus us trying to impose our life agenda or things that we wanted to do. We manifest that in our children. I think that's a dangerous thing to do, so that we don't impose upon them a pathway that we think they ought to have. We expose them, Michael, and then we nurture what they seem to excel in and find joy in. To me, that develops a sense of confidence. It gives them a sense of place, particularly among large sibling groups, and it gives them a lane. It gives them an identity. And so as parents, you know, I think that's one strategy. And should your child show promise within athleticism, or maybe they don't show promise, but they find great joy in it, you know, support that. The second piece I would say is understanding the biological development of our children, to understand that the 18 to 22, or really to say the 15 to 22-year-old, is dealing with a certain kind of biological reality. Not to get too sort of ideological with you, but human beings have stages of development. As a child, you learn through tactile. You put things in your mouth, you taste them, you have to touch them in order to learn, and then you look outwardly to cues that tell you, okay, that's not, typically through either pain, pleasure, or parental influence and direction. But then you come out of that, and then you eventually get into puberty, right? And puberty has its bodily representations, you know, acne, you start to get funky and all those kind of things. But your body is basically doing the human, most profound human thing, is it's getting ready to have the ability to produce another child, right? That's around the age of 15. After puberty, you enter into a physical stage, right? Your sense of self, your peer group is highly important to you. Sexual curiosity starts to come in here. You navigate social settings, always mindful of your stature. Violence, you know, is in your toolkit, right? You know, most 60-year-olds don't fight, right? Most 45-year-olds don't fight, you know, because it's no longer in them. But that 15 to 26 age is a stage of physicality. You want to be tested, right? That's why the military recruits 18-year-olds. They would have no success recruiting the 38-year-old. They go to that age that says, hey, man, you want to jump out this plane and go jump around some fan and fight some other people? You know, the 18-year-old is like, yeah, you know, I'm down for that. But, you know, as you age out of that. And there's also a certain kind of a desire for fun, a desire to kind of be active, right? And so when your son or daughter is perhaps not owning the intellectual self just yet with the full enthusiasm that you want, it may not be a result of a disinterest. It could just be that their physical stage of development is prioritizing other things. If you can dissect this with them, talk about that, acknowledge where they're at, but also remind them the importance of nurturing the intellectual self, because when you're 45 years old, you're not going to call upon things you did physically anymore. You're going to recall upon things that you learned that are in your memory bank that you can use to solve grown human being problems. And so in the college space, the intellectual self, in my opinion, needs to be the authoritative lead, the dominant identity that manages and manages everything that's in this atmosphere. And then for an athlete, that's a second complementary identity, because it can have future impact, particularly if you go on and earn some money around your particular sport. But they're dealing all of this when they're in their physical stage. And then eventually the child moves out, enters into an emotional stage, love, sense of self, esteem, purpose in life. And then you enter into an intellectual phase where meaning and interpretation has much more context for you. And then, you know, the final phase of all human beings is spirituality. But it's helpful to understand where your child is so you can help name it and then redirect them to focus on things that may not necessarily be aligned with where they are biologically at that moment. So, yeah, that's a long way of response to some things I'd encourage parents to think about.
That's a great response. And again, folks, you got to absorb this stuff, but then again, you can always come back and listen to the Parents Coach Parents Network here on Blog Talk Radio and check out this particular episode. Hey, because we're trying to give you some information right now that really and truly going to help you connect with your child, and especially your child being that athlete. You know, because oftentimes, and I don't know how much you've actually seen it around the campus or seen it in your own environment, oftentimes many parents, for whatever reason, during that time period that they're going through the recruiting process with their child, they seem to slowly get pulled back out of the picture. I've seen that far too many times. I've heard folks talk about that, and I'm saying, okay, that is not the direction that you want to go. You want to slowly start to insert yourself into a greater role into the picture. You know, I wrote in my book, folks, and I got to give myself a shameless plug. You don't know if you don't know the sports parent guide, but I wrote in that book, at that point, you're no longer the driver, but you're still the biggest advocate in the car. You're still in that car. You're not the backseat driver. You're not the passenger driver. You are just the biggest advocate in the car and allowing that child to come up with their own identity and go from there. And you're there to nurture it. You're there to help them, you know, perfect it. Or bring it to the closest level of perfection that you can possibly see. You know, as we think about this, and you touched on some things a second ago, and I want to throw this out, and then we get your thoughts on this, and then we're going to take a little quick break just to give folks time to write down some of these notes, because I know they ain't keeping up with all the stuff that you're laying out for them today, Mr. Jones. But that's all right. We're going to give you a second to take some notes. But something like you just said, and you touched on it earlier, you touched on it in the opening, you know, how much does the environment play a role or is a factor in that child forming their identity?
And by environment, you're kind of, you know, where they are in the world, socioeconomic status, gender, race, all that kind of stuff? Well, that's a profound and multi-layered question. You know, America has a complex history, particularly when it comes to beautiful people of color, black folk, and we see that play itself out in a range of different ways. But if I could read into the question, there is sort of this a disproportionality of focus and interest in the world of sport, particularly non-Olympic sports and revenue-generating sports. So, you know, if you were to go into an urban corridor school, a middle school or an elementary school, and you ask beautiful young boys and girls kind of what their interests are, there's a hyper alignment. Good.
Yeah, we still here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I heard some music come in. There's a hyper alignment in interests and careers that are either in the entertainment space or within the sports space, right? And so, For understandable reasons, because that's a space where one can compete. One can be measured in objective terms, meaning you look at the scoreboard and it's clear to you. You look at the track meet and you see clearly who crossed the line first. So things that are objective that don't require the subjective interpretation of some evaluator, some judger, someone that you submit a paper to, an English paper, and then you don't quite know where their mind is or what perceptions they have, and so then a grade produced is mitigated by a whole range of potential assumptions and those things. And so in things that are objective, where they're measured by the eye, people of color tend to do very well. things that are subjective tend to have this sort of question mark that perpetually lingers. And so for a host of different reasons, not to mention that sport has been the battlefield for race relations since the early part of the 20th century. It's been a place where we could both have segregated sport opportunities, but also we could compete in initial exhibition games in white and black sports, but also eventually through integration of sports, we could compete, and you could compete in physical kinds of ways. You could stand up with a certain kind of head held high posture within sport that you perhaps couldn't do in segregated, racialized societies. So it was this unique space, and for a whole host of reasons, perhaps the role modeling we see, you know, people are largely influenced by what they see in media, what they see in movies, what they see in TVs, and understandably, our sport figures have been symbols of heroes, symbols of activists, symbols of achievement, right? So there's a cultural uplift there, but then also there's a materialistic association with, you know, with the high earnings of sport. And so that has influenced all human beings, but perhaps in more concentrated ways, beautiful young people of color. And so, you know, and then America's history, you know, given segregation, the absence of inherited wealth, you know, poverty plays itself out problematically in urban communities. There's correlation between poverty and education. There's a correlation between education and incarceration. There's a correlation between economics and literacy, right? So all that plays itself out, and we still see a disproportionate representation of first-generation students who are Latino, Native American, and Black, right? And so those are all environmental circumstances that the nation is contending with, and they do shape, you know, kind of choices that beautiful young folks deal with and what they kind of bring into the environment. You know, single parent issues are often seen within D1 level kinds of sports, and there's a whole nuance to that. And so, yeah, you know, a young person comes to us and they're largely shaped by some of the factors that I mentioned, but you know, they have opportunity, but those opportunities are beginning points. And the beginning point is largely shaped by the time that they live in, the communities by which they were raised, the type of home functionality or dysfunctionality, income, things they've been exposed to, and what has been prioritized for them, right? What has been prioritized to the young person? You can tell that almost instantly during the recruitment process and certainly the early phases of their experience within the collegiate space. You know the ones that academics was dominant and sport was a complementary versus sport was dominant and academics was an afterthought. You can tell that right away.
And that is so wonderfully true. Folks, I know you have some questions by now. You can always call in and reach us at 516-453-9932. 516-453-9932. 3-2, excuse me, not 3-3. I never heard that number before, 3-3. but anyway, 3-2. Okay, we're going to step away for a hot second, but we'll be right back.
God, athletes, scholarship, mentors, help you and elevate. Parents, coaching, parents. God, athletes, scholarship, mentors, and elevate. Parents, coaching, parents, networking. Know the game.
Mr. Scott, Coach Klein, just calling to check in with you. I'm on my way to Patterson School today. I'll see Mike again tomorrow.
Mr. Scott, how you doing? This is Jeff Battle again. We got disconnected. If there's any problems or whatever, Coach Muse is looking forward to showing you guys around. My cell number.
Mike, this is Skip Prosser from Wake Forest. It's about 7:40. I understand you went by campus.
Mr. Scott, it's Coach Fernandez here with the University of Miami. Hey, hope is well. I just wanted to touch bases with you. I think your son was coming home this weekend and wanted me to give you a call. Hope.
How you doing, Mr. Scott? This is Chris Pompey, New Mexico State University. Saw your son play during the summer with the Rams. If you can, give me a call at your
Hey, Mr. Scott, this is Coach Bradley down at Clemson. If you had a chance, my cell is 864.
This message will be saved for...
Hey, Michael, George Johnson again with the NBPA. We are playing phone tag. If it's okay...
Mike Scott, Dan Williams, Philadelphia School District Sports Administration, Compliance, NCAA. You left...
Hey, Mike, this is John Belant, the head coach at West Virginia. Try to get in touch with you here, so I want to talk with you a little bit about your son. I know he's at home.
Hey, Mr. Scott, Dave Lakeville calling. It's about 6:15. Hope all is well. I talked to Coach Keats earlier today, and he said he had a conversation with you.
Next message.
Hey, Mr. Scott, Coach Keats, call me back with your facts.
Good evening, Mr. Scott. This is Chris Horn giving you a call back from thesaber.com. I hope all's going well. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Sorry about it. I was actually just...
Mr. Scott, this is Justin Young, editor of Rivals.com Basketball Recruiting. I just want to give you a call this morning. It's 9:45. I understand...
Mr. Scott, how are you? This is Dave Leto calling from Virginia. Hope all is well. Just trying to touch base.
This is Coach Gene. I have just gotten some disturbing news from some of the coaches that have been involved with trying to convince...
Yes, Mr. Scott, this is Sidney Lowe from NC State University. Just wanted to touch base with you, sir, and get an opportunity to speak with you at your convenience. Had the pleasure of watching Michael play the other day in the scrimmage.
Guy, athletes, scholarship mentors, and elevate parents, coaching parents, know the game.
Hey, folks, we're back. We've been talking with Mr. Alonzo Jones from Arizona State, and he's just been sharing some great information with us on the identity, the situation identity matrix. You know, and during the little break there, folks, that we took, me and Mr. Jones was talking about just some of the things that they're doing at Arizona State and, you know, some of the things that your child should be looking for or looking into when he or she reached their respective campus. Mr. Jones, tell us about your championship round.
Right. Thanks so much, Michael. Yes, parents, when you guys are on the recruitment phase, you really, really want to look at three major things. One is, in no particular order, but you want to look at the opportunities within the broader university. You know, what is the reputation of the university? What is the profile of the faculty, of the student community, because that is the space that will your son or daughter will join to come of age intellectually. What's the diversity of the environment? What's the reputation of the college, the majors that they're choosing? And then set the expectation with your son or daughter that they just don't stay within the athletic facility, that they get out of that space and engage the broader university experience as well, because these are such robust spaces where one can find inspiration, one can find amazement, a sense of self that transcends the athlete identity. And where you go is a large contributor to that. So that would be one thing I would mention. The other part, of course, is the sport, right? The quality of the program, what are the resources there to help develop athletically, physically, all things related to the sport. What's the quality of the trainers? Certainly the quality of the coach, but what's also the personality of the coaches, right? And what you're looking for is will they maintain a sense of high care, right? Is it just lip service in the recruitment process, or do you pick up a genuine authenticity that they see your son or daughter as more than just an athlete? They see them as someone that they are going to be close to for the next 3 to 4 years and are going to be sort of de facto parents, that they're going to have a sort of a love for them and a responsibility to nurture them as holistic beings. Your gut will tell you whether or not that's the case. And then secondly, thirdly, you want to look at
Mr. Jones, let me jump in there real quick. And sorry for cutting you off, but you just hit something, you know, that has, man, just put the gold seal on something I've been saying here at the Parents Coach Parents Network, for many years. I say over the last 12 years, I've been saying that very same thing, that you want to ensure that coach, not only that coach, but that entire coaching staff,
is
going to continue to instill those values, those traits, build that character the same way that you were doing prior to that son or daughter of yours leaving your home and going to that institution. That process has to continue. We can't allow that process to fall apart, because if and when we do allow that process to fall apart, they resort back to the next best thing. And oftentimes the next best thing isn't that direction in which we want them to go into. The next best thing could be what's happening on the block, or, you know, what's happening in that social setting that has drawn them in. Or, you know, as some of us may even know, what is the gang talking about? You know, how the game has influenced your child. So if that coach is not still trying to, as you would say, be that de facto parent, if that coach is not still trying to instill those values, you may want to go back to the drawing board again.
You may want to
go back to the drawing board. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right, Michael. I mean, the biggest influencer for that age set, men and women, is the genuine care and manifestations of a love, not a parental love, but I'm positioning myself as a mentor. I'm positioning myself as a de facto parent. I'm positioning myself as a steward in the development, ongoing development of the 18, 19-year-old who critically needs to be embraced, who needs to be challenged, who needs to be encouraged, who needs to be redirected when they're sort of going in a different direction. All young people need that. And so we can't abandon that responsibility and just stay within the X's and O's. There has to be multiple people in that environment. It's not going to resonate all the time with the head coach or the position coach. There needs to be multiple people who are good human beings that care for folks, so a student can resonate and make a sincere connection with someone in that space. That can be their sounding board. That can be their, that they just need to vent, or if they need to be challenged, right? So care is both praise and critique, and young people need that as they transition from a young person into their own adulthood. And so the third piece, as I was talking about, lines up with that, and that what is the co-curricular development opportunities that the program will provide, or to say it differently, what are the life skill content that the program will provide? And so in our university environment at ASU, we have a progressive set of workshops over a four-year period that we provide content that makes sense where a person is within this four-year experience. So the freshmen will go through identity transition, meaning they're going from top dog in their high school environment to a new space where the intellectual rigor is higher. All the faculty are PhDs that wrote the book. That's another level. They are no longer top dog, but they're at the beginning of yet another athletic sequence of years where they got to kind of start over, and the people are faster, bigger, stronger, and now all of a sudden they got this self-check moment, right? And then they're having to balance many different identities that we talked about, to include student athlete, and then the nuances of a social life, and, you know, just kind of embracing the environment. And then there's also decision making that they have to make. So we talk a lot about drugs. We talk a lot about alcohol. We talk a lot about relationships, sex. We have very candid conversations around that. Newfound freedoms. Supplements, you know, the challenges around what you put into your body, talk about stress management. One of the first things that will become compromised for a collegiate athlete is sleep. Their sleeping patterns rearrange. And so we encourage them to simply replicate the habits and value that got them to the place, to continue to manifest that and add positive things to it so that they can continue to grow. But, you know, oftentimes young people come to the environment and they can either manifest prior behaviors or they can go buck wild, Michael. And those
That's
that
true.
Go buck wild, yeah, those that go buck wild completely find themselves on the wrong side of the equation. They might have a code of conduct issue. They might fail a drug policy. They might have some issues within the residence halls. And then all of a sudden they get that label, right? They become a high-touch person rather than a contributing person that understands who they are and where they're at and what their appropriate identity ought to be in the environment. And so, unfortunately, they get derailed. You know, I often tell the beautiful young people, I say, how something begins is tied to how it ends. If you begin this thing clear about purpose, then you're going to have positivity on the back end. But if you haven't thought, if you haven't self-actualized, if you haven't really contemplated about where you are, an intellectual space with a competitive athletic program and who you are in it, a thinking athlete, then you're going to have issues. And sometimes that biology, that physical stage we talked about, there's this internal civil war, Michael, between the physical self and the intellectual self, or the social self and the student self. And so we harp on that. And then we talk to them a lot about the developing the capacity to be in the moment, to be firmly footed in the present, while psychologically always realizing that you're going to be older than you are right now. And there's a part of you that always has to be preparing, nurturing the future you yet to come. And so House Party Lit is not nurturing the future you. Social Madden you is not nurturing the future you. It is the student self and, to a lesser degree, the athlete self that is nurturing the future you that's yet to come. And so that's an example of what we do in the freshman year and the sophomore year. And then in our institution, after the junior year, it's all about preparing for life after sport, career readiness, networking, internships, job opportunities. And we emphasize that sport is now, perhaps more than any other time, both physical and mental, right? Both what you can do in terms of talent, but how you carry yourself. There's so much talent out there that a pro commissioner or a coach is going to select a person that can be both can handle themselves as a young person and who also has high performance. If you just have high performance but you're labeled as a problem and you got all this talent out there, 100% of the time the coach is going to go for the one that has balance, you know, and that is something that we sort of teach. You know, they're not just observing your highlight film. They're also observing how you answer complex questions, how you carry yourself in mixed company, your capacity to appropriately represent your age in a mature kind of way. And they're looking at that because they know that team harmony and cohesion is tied to personalities, not just performance. So those are things we talk about.
And I think, you know, at the end of that four-year cycle, I'd be willing to bet that each and every one of those young folks that came through that program have a true sense of direction, and it's on to do greater things, you know, bigger
right.
and better things in life. And that's awesome. Go ahead.
Michael, I'll say they will have that outcome if they engage and participate, right?
Yes.
Now, that's another Absolutely. Thing I definitely encourage parents. Parents, when you're talking to your student athlete at a collegiate level, ask them how they're doing in the classroom, right? Ask them to expand upon that. Get a sense if they're owning it, if they're leaning in, or if they're doing it begrudgingly. Ask them about their social self, their relationships, their friends, right? Also, of course, ask them how the sport is. I wouldn't lead with that, right? But then also ask them, are they engaging? Are they taking advantage of the programs and services that are available to them? Because in my profession, Michael, the biggest challenge we have is not content. It is participation levels. Because as you know, you take a student athlete in high time demand, they are going to do things that have consequence. You know, you don't go to film, coach give you a consequence. You don't go to academics, your eligibility is compromised. But these co-curricular things don't necessarily have a mandatory element to it. And then the beautiful young people, consistent with where they're at, they tend to opt out in things that can be tremendously valuable to them. So that's one of the biggest challenges of my profession.
And I agree with you 100% because many of the things that you just said, I have echoed on this show and echoed throughout my time, you know, speaking to other parents about how they can best connect with their athlete. And see, I use a slightly different term. I use the term child athlete more than I use student athlete, because I want to make sure that we understand that from our perspective as parents, that's our child first, you know, and then he or she is an athlete. You know, student just so happens comes into play, but I want to make sure that you understand, okay, this is my child. This isn't just some kid that I decide to look after or be a caretaker or mentor to or whatever. This is my child, you know.
Right.
And then there's some other reasons why I stay away from the term student athlete, because of the, I think because of the origin of it wasn't in their best intent of the athlete itself, you know.
Right.
That's a whole nother story, a whole nother conversation.
No, no, you're naming it.
Yeah.
But as
we prepare to wind down for the day, and man, I don't believe that that time has just come and gone just that quick.
Yes, sir.
Tell us some things, some other things that you got going on, and you know, I know you also have a hot YouTube channel out there that's starting to grow and pick up some feet and fire. Tell us a little bit more about that, and maybe some folks want to follow you.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. You know, the YouTube channel that you talk about, it's called J4 Conversations. It is probably my current joy at the moment. It's basically a platform where of two dads having a genuine conversation with their two sons. The other gentleman is Gene Boyd. He's the deputy athletic director that I mentioned early. You know, we have a lifelong friendship. And coincidentally, we both have 18-year-olds who are freshmen in college at ASU. His son is on the football team, and my son is on the is in a leadership path there at the university. And so we have these fathers of 18-year-old sons that have, you know, conversations about life, relationships, social media, COVID, the pandemic, purpose of a college degree, personal excellence, just a whole range of different topics. But it's a very fun, interactive way of both listening to our children who are at the dawn of young manhood, you know, philosophizing and offer perhaps unsolicited guidance and advice. But it's a nice experience between two dads and their sons that's kind of chopping. It's called J4 Conversations. We'd welcome your participation in it. Please give us a subscription. Take a look at some of the shows, and if you see value in it, feel free to share it with other people in your circles who might also find some value in it. Yep, J4 Conversation.
All right, all right. Hey, Mr. Jones, we'd like to thank you for joining us this afternoon. Hey, you're welcome back anytime here to the Prayers Coach of Prayers Network. We're on live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And like I said, as time go on, we're going to be reaching back out to you because
yes,
we
sir.
Like what you bring to the table. We appreciate you, sir.
Michael, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to chop.
All right, all right. Well, folks, hey, it's been fun. It's been real. It's been real fun. And you know what I say. This is what it's all about, getting that opportunity to share information with the next generation of parents to ensure that they understand how they can best be their child's biggest advocate. You know, hashtag be an advocate. That's what I say. And that's what we say here at the Parents Coach of Parents Network. On that note, folks, you know, I got to go with my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and his college experience. Go ahead, let's take us out.
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing, I'm out the diploma, out the pen. But I'm hating then, playing ball is just a small part. with this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching, I'm just trying to spit knowledge and the knowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.